patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So there is a saying of don't kick a guy when he's down, Adam. And I feel like after last night's game, we were given the boots while we were down. I'm about ready for extra inning games to, I just need a break, you know, just give me a break. I don't want to see a walk off. I don't want to go to extra innings. I just want a nice clean win tonight. That's what I'm after. Just stop the bleeding, you know?
I don't know. I'm here for the heartbreaking losses. Sprinkle them in all summer long.
That's all I'm asking. Sprinkle them in. Can we not clump them together and shove it down our throats?
Stir the batter. Mix it up.
Stir the batter.
As long as we're done with these by September and October, then that's fine.
Couple heartbreaking losses in a row here. Losing to Seattle in extra innings. Obviously, yesterday to Boston in the ninth. Not the way you like to see it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the walk-off. This is the mailbag, Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon as we do it here. A big tip of the hat to the grounds crew, all of you watching and listening at home or on your way to work or wherever you wind up consuming the podcast. We comb through your interactions throughout the week and do this every single Tuesday. And we have a pile of comments and questions to get to, so we won't take too long here. Of course, you can always reach out on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast. We have plenty. And by the way, there are so many DMs I get on Twitter, and I am very thankful for that interaction, and I really do enjoy chatting baseball with everybody. Don't take it personal if you don't get on the mailbag, because we can put about two or three from Twitter on, and we're literally getting dozens a week. So just keep trying. I do try and switch it up as much as possible. Same goes with all the platforms. Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast. Shoot a message to Adam. We've got Discord going all the time. If you do want a link for that, shoot us a DM and we can send that to you. Very easy to set up, and that is going constantly. If you've never been on Discord, you need to envision it sort of like a group chat, but with different tabs. And so you can kind of group chat in all these different themes throughout it. Again, we send that disc. Am I explaining that very oldly?
No, is that why you're laughing? Great. Yeah. This is one of my favorite things, is old people describing new things to other old people. It doesn't get better than this. This is peak Scott right now. I'm loving this. Well, you did great. This is
It's funny because anybody who knows what Discord is anyway.
Okay, so next I need you to explain Snapchat and TikTok.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, I will not be doing that. Patreon. You do get priority when it comes to mailbag. And so we have quite a few Patreon today that we're going to get to. A big tip of the hat and a thank you to everyone who has spent that buck a week. It is appreciated. I know that Adam has kind of unveiled our new Patreon yesterday.
So new format. We got the MLB Monday mornings. That is our Monday morning show. Yeah, you guessed it, every Monday morning. We talk MLB broad strokes stuff, so not just baseball. That started there yesterday. Scott was a no-show for it, but I still gave you 58 minutes of terrible baseball takes.
So. I was so impressed, man, when I checked it. I was like, he did an hour. Wow.
I know. I really was. I outdid myself. So, anyways, let's get to the mailbag. You ready?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
All right. So we're going to start with Patreon questions. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, we got probably 3 dozen comments about your Lime Lady story.
Oh, yes.
So Tales from the Road, Scott. It was a big hit. You didn't know I was recording you or that.
I had no idea. I was just ranting to you.
We were waiting for Mitch Bannon to join us and you were just ranting and I was like, record this. Anyways, I'm glad everybody enjoyed as much as I did.
I was really surprised that quite a few people reach out and stuff. So I'm glad you enjoyed that. Me being pissed off.
Very good. We don't get to see you upset and flustered too often. So,
yeah.
Okay. From Patreon, we're going to start with Wyatt, who says, hey guys, question for Monday's mailbag on Tuesday this week. Is Jordan Romano the Blue Jays closer long term?
Yes.
If so, all right. There you go. Thanks for the question, Wyatt.
sorry.
sorry. Is Romano the Jays closer long term? If so, what does his contract look like?
How many years of control does Mr. Romano still have?
Including this year, 3 years. So he's in his first year of arbitration.
First year of arbitration. And
be a free agent at 33.
At 33. I don't think you even worry about an extension or a contract with Jordan Romano until it comes up. At 33, he is going to probably be in his prime as a closer. You see those 33, 34-year-old guys who can still get the velo up there, which is what really Jordan Romano hangs his slider on, is the fact that he can hit 100 and just throw slider. I kind of compared it to Duck Duck Goose, right? Mm-hmm. The annoying kid who just loves the attention. He's the guy running around the circle, and all he's doing is screaming duck the whole time. You're waiting on Goose, and that's kind of the way Jordan Romano operates with his slider, right? He just fires sliders at you until you're convinced it's got to be a slider, and then he hits you with that goose. And at 33 years old, he should still be able to do the velo to make that slider fastball pairing work. And you see where he's at. We see relievers constantly, even though Jordan Romano has been incredibly consistent over the last 3 years, you got to wait and see where that's at. You need to wait and see where this Blue Jays pen is at too. Who knows? By that time, Zach Pop could be our full-time closer. You never know.
So I'm with you on the wait and see, just for framing this, closer salary talk. Edwin Diaz, $19.6 million. Obviously, his season is over after the World Baseball Classic. He's 29 years old. Kenley Jansen, $16 million at 35 years old. Raisel Iglesias at $16 million, 33 years old. Liam Hendricks, $14.3 million mm-hmm. at $34 million. Josh Hader, $14 million. He's 29 years old. Then with Houston, you've got $14 million for Ryan Pressly. He's 34 years old as well. So for me, it comes down to like, yeah, it's a wait and see approach for sure. And a lot of it is going to come down to playoff performances.
Yeah, I would say so too. Like big game performances.
Yeah, if the Jays go on a couple deep runs over the next 3 years and Romano is not blowing it for us on the biggest stage, then yeah, break out the checkbook and you give them $80 million over 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying that he deserves to be paid more than Edwin Diaz, but I am saying that 3 years from now, prices are just going up every year anyways, right? So I don't think that $20 million a year is even going to be the highest paid closer at that point.
If there's anything to be said about Jordan Romano, it is that he does seem to be that big game guy, that big situation pressure dude. In fact, this is a stat from the flight deck. Brant Dubs on Twitter. He says Jordan Romano in non-save situations, 101 games, 96 innings pitched, 4.31 ERA, a 1.38 whip, 16 home runs given up. Save situations, 70 games, 73.1 innings pitched, 0.49 ERA, 0.72 whip, 2 home runs given up. And that goes to show you, maybe bringing Jordan Romano in non-save situations isn't the way to go about it. That's a fairly substantial sample size that was just given there. And when Jordan Romano has a save that he can gobble up, he's going to get it.
Yes and no. I mean, this is, I think, a great example of where stats can be the truth, but not entirely
the whole picture.
Fair, because the reason he was not getting save opportunities early in his MLB career is because he wasn't good enough for that yet, right? Like, I'm looking at his 2019 season, 17 games, 15 innings pitched, zero save opportunities as a 26-year-old. Obviously, you're not putting a rookie in the closer role, right? Well, his ERA that year was 7.6. So
there is a reason why Jordan Romano was straight up not given the opportunity to be a closer. They were trying to work him into a starter. He wound up getting taken in the Rule 5 draft by Texas. They returned him. They flipped him to a reliever. And even at that point, when they flipped him to a reliever, they weren't seeing those triple digits out of his fastball. So he was a low leverage guy. And that is such a good, it's such an important thing to bring up, Adam, what you just talked about, right? Is like, that we're going off stats that are old here. For the non-save situations.
I just mean, like, let's look at his non-save opportunity stats since he's become the closer. Over the last
2 years. Yes. Right?
Yeah. And then even if it's a smaller sample size, I feel like it's a more accurate representation of who he is, right? Like, if you go, well, he's pitched in 15 non-save opportunities and here are his numbers, you know, over the course of since he's become the closer, that's... Someone do the homework for me.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's so I just want to throw a little bit of salt on the wound, water on the fire. I'm not ready for my analogies today, Scott. Yes. One cup of coffee, not cutting it. Not cutting it.
There's not enough cream in Adam's body right now.
All right, get your comments in now. Thanks. Anyways, it's a family show, Scott. All right. Thanks for the comment, Wyatt. Hope that didn't clear anything up for you. Next one comes from Patreon as well. Devin says, yesterday's loss was a frustrating one. Can you help me find a silver lining? Nate Pearson is my offer. Two innings pitched. Leverage situation. I mean, tie ball game in the eighth. I didn't expect to see that from...
No, Nate I agree. Pearson. Him going,
like, this is his second appearance this season. He's coming in for multiple innings in a, I know he came in, it wasn't a tie game, but like game wasn't out of hand. It wasn't a, hey, go mop up the,
no,
the
it
rest
wasn't.
Of the game. Right. Like, and then he pitched well. I mean, he gave up some fly balls that didn't leave the park, but three strikeouts. He got out of it.
He went two innings. That was really impressive to see him go out there and close up the seventh and the eighth. Yeah, that's probably the silver lining.
I mean, Bo Bichette went 5 for 5.
Bo Bichette continues to be the silver lining. Almost no matter what happens in a game, we can go to Bo Bichette for the silver lining. The dude has been absolutely lights out, hitting a long one. His home runs continue to move up. He had four singles, I think it was, and just... A big situation guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he is definitely, we talked Jordan Romano being a big situation guy. Bo Bichette certainly is that. And that ties into the next comment here. So Sammy from Patreon says, fellas, can we keep Bo Bichette as our leadoff man, please? What are your thoughts on that, Scott?
No. I mean, I've said this a million times. I want to see Springer hitting third or fourth. I think he profiles as that type of hitter far better. And I would love to see him because of the Springer dinger. But then you're going to be in the same situation. But with Bo Bichette, he's going to hit bombs out of that leadoff spot. And you're going to be like, well, I wish there were guys on base. So who do you have leading off? I think you stick with the guy who's done it his whole career and leave it with Springer there and move Bo up when you got to give Springer the day off.
All right.
We don't really have that prototypical leadoff guy. You know, the dude who just gets on base and maybe isn't a power guy, you know?
Baseball doesn't have that.
No, the prototypical leadoff guy doesn't exist anymore, pretty much.
It's we're going to try and hit as many solo shots as we can. Who has the best chance of doing it? Put him at the top of the order for every possible at bat. Yeah, I don't know. I like Bo Bichette leading off. I know Joel Haykami is a big proponent of that, isn't he?
I mean, it gets him another at bat. But I mean, him hitting second has been fine. I don't know, man. I think the lineup is pretty solid, 1-4. And going Springer, Bo, Vladdy, Chapman in any order is going to be a nightmare for pitchers.
Yeah, I think I would like to see Kevin Kiermaier. Is that a crazy take for me to say I want to see Kevin Kiermaier hitting in the top four?
Yeah, that's a crazy take.
It's a crazy thing.
Absolutely it is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as far as, and hear me out, this is my logic behind it. He's probably our best. I mean, the closest thing we have to a prototypical leadoff guy, right? That's why he's hitting ninth.
Yes.
He's a lefty. If you did sprinkle him in at the number two spot, I mean, I know. It's as I'm saying it, there are definite ick coming out of my mouth, but if you are to buy into the balance the lineup thing, that's how you do it. You don't stick all your left-handed batters at 6-7-8 and go, we're balanced now. You're just, you know what I mean?
I mean, I know what you mean. I hate it, but I know what you mean. You're 100% right. I think what they really wanted was Belt and Varsho to be doing substantially better with the bat and have them higher in the lineup rather than need to constantly slide them down. But I don't know.
Kevin Kiermaier hitting 280. I don't have a problem with a 280 guy hitting at the top of the lineup, getting on base for Vladdy to drive him home.
I like Kiermaier in the nine hole where he can get on for Springer and Bo, you know, the second time through the order.
I like it too. I'm just
You
know, when it comes to pitching decisions in bullpen spots, right? You go, okay, well, we're going to bring in the lefty to face the lefty. It's like, okay, great. That didn't help Vlad or Bo or Springer at all because we're bringing them in for the number six guy. Our righties have already hit, right? Let's bring in the lefty to face Kiermaier at number two, I guess. And then sweet. Now Vladdy's hitting off a lefty. I don't know.
I mean, really what would be the dream for this coaching staff is if Dalton Varsho got incredibly hot and they managed to put him in the cleanup spot more regularly, or vice versa with Belt as well. If Belt could show any signs of life, that would be a decent spot for him to be. And you know what? Who cares about handedness if you've got Matt Chapman hitting a 1200 OPS? Stick Matt Chapman wherever you want.
Sure. Let me just play along with you, though. The dream of Belt or Varsho just being electric for a month and be like, well, there's our cleanup guy. I'd still, even if that's the case, I'd rather see Varsho hitting two and being in the middle of our right-handed power.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. I would agree with that.
Right.
But you know what, man? The thing
just
is,
to get the pitcher out of his rhythm, if that's the thing, right? It's like, oh, it's all righty. So it's just sinker here, slider away, blah, blah, blah. Isn't that the whole value of having a lefty is to get him out of his rhythm? And now he's out of his rhythm facing Vladdy or whatever. I don't know. I know it's dumb, but it's.
No, I agree.
And I'm not a lefty guy, batters kind of guy. I just think if we're going to buy into that logic,
is the top of the order has worked very well. One of the only problems we haven't had is the top of this order. And maybe you don't mess with it.
Fair enough. Or maybe you mess with it to save the bottom. I don't know. Anyways, I'm just being stupid now. All right. Next one comes in from Patreon as well. Donovan says Schneider might not need to be fired, but he does need to be demoted. I don't even know what this means, Scott. Like, sent down to AAA? Like, given a different parking spot? I don't know what it is here.
He has options. He has options.
He's less than 5 years of MLB experience. Sure. Anyways, the questionable bullpen decisions keep piling up. How the bleep could Schneider bring Berríos back in for the sixth? And then goes on to list just a bunch of other things that we all know off the top of our head, right? So I don't need to list them all. Let's start with the Berríos thing coming back in the sixth inning. Obviously, at that point, five innings, two earned runs. It was a 3-2 game for the Blue Jays. I didn't have a problem with it. Obviously, it didn't go well in the sixth. Gave up, I think, three runs in the sixth inning there before getting removed. Mm-hmm.
I hated it. When he got out of the fifth inning, I even turned to Taylor. I turned to my wife and I was like, holy crap. Berríos really bent but didn't break there. This is perfect with all these lefties coming up in the lineup. Let's get Meza in there. Call it a day. Let his confidence build. You know what? He didn't have his stuff. He still managed to go five innings. He was in line for the win. He only gave up two runs. And he made us all sweat the entire game. Yeah, he was only at 80 pitches, but I don't understand with after the way that Schneider operated the bullpen against Seattle there, going two innings with Trevor Richards, having his high leverage guys rested. Why would you not use Meza in a situation where there's lefties coming up? Why have a lefty if you're never going to go to him? I don't know. That was one where I was like, that was the one spot this season that bothered me more than anything Schneider has done. And there are definitely moments throughout this first month of 2023 where you definitely could give a thumbs down to some of Schneider's decisions. Listen, there is always going to be one third to half of the fan base calling for the manager's head, no matter what. We saw it with Montoyo. We saw it with Gibbons. This is not new. It's very, very easy to blame the manager when things don't go right. And sometimes it is on the manager, but most of the time it's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, everything you're saying, I agree with, I guess. I mean, he was at 80 pitches going into the sixth inning. He just had two really good, like, double play ending fourth and fifth innings. Like,
he had runners on base every single inning. He didn't have one clean inning.
That happens. I mean, he has been pitching a lot better this season. For me, Berríos is the guy who's like, inning number one, you just know he's either got it or he doesn't. And it felt like, maybe it was a toss up still, but or maybe he was getting lucky in yesterday's game to go as far as he did. And maybe we should have just been like, hey, let's just be happy that we got five out of them and call it a day. 80, I don't know. Maybe after the first home run he gave up in the sixth inning, I'd be like, all right, let's get Meza in. But I didn't have a problem initially in real time starting the sixth inning and seeing Berríos getting trotted out there. I didn't honestly have a problem with it. Obviously, in hindsight, I do. But I mean, he's at 82 pitches going into the sixth inning. It's only two earned runs so far. I'm like, yeah, all right. Sure.
For me, it was For me, it was just less about pitch count and more about the eye test and what I'd seen the entire game out of Berríos, which was not very sharp. Dodging bullets the whole game, allowing base runners and then getting out of it, defense bailing him out. I mean, take the five and take the win on that one. I don't know. Again, hindsight is 20/20, but that was the thing about hindsight. I was screaming it at the TV before the home run was given up. Even when he went up to face Duran there, I'm like, why? Why? But anyways,
yeah, it is what it is, I suppose, right?
And as for firing John Schneider or demoting him, it's not going to happen. The team is 18-11. John Schneider is still a rookie manager. I know that people constantly point to the fact, well, he's managed for 6 years. Well, guess what? Managing in the big leagues is a little different. And if you think that these decisions are being made by John Schneider himself, isolated, he's just a rogue in there doing things his way, you are not paying attention to the way this Blue Jays organization operates. They are all about collaboration. For everyone being like, bring Donnie Baseball in as the manager, if you don't think that he's not getting a say in what is happening with that bullpen, you are sadly mistaken. Of course, Don Mattingly is there with John Schneider, right next to him with Pete Walker, going over the matchups, going over the numbers, and making a collaborative decision. This is not just John Schneider. And I don't know if things would be all that different if Donnie Baseball was the guy at the helm. How many World Series did he win with the Miami Marlins?
Shots fired at Donnie Baseball. I like the idea of just giving him like a shittier parking spot. It's like, hey, the job's still yours, but like, we want you to know we're not totally thrilled. You're going to have to walk a little bit further across the parking lot today.
He just shows up in the parking spot, just says Bo Bichette's third spot.
exactly. All right, let's get to the next one then. Okay, so this one comes from Joshua Derbiker on Twitter.
Yes,
says, okay, Josh says, hey guys, after listening to the Mitch Bannon interview, I was wondering if there is a flaw in the type that we tend to draft. Are we bad drafters, or is this simply a high risk, high reward scenario where we have a higher ratio of quote unquote prospects that break your heart, but hopefully the offset is more will turn into big stars? Does the current regime have a position player prospect that's made it? I'm spiraling here now. Haha, thanks, boys. Now, Scott, I do have to bail on you momentarily, so I'm going to let you just go. I'm hearing noise from my kitchen. My wife is asleep and my daughter's at school, so my dog is into something. Okay. I have to go and deal with this.
Okay.
I will return. I will have my pods in. I will listen to what you're saying and I will respond. Hopefully this is not a full-blown crisis.
All right. Noted. Okay, well, Adam goes and takes care of his pup, his most mischievous pup. Let's get into prospects. The truth is, and Josh Derbiker, I think, is kind of pointing to the fact that the middle infielders that we have seen succeed have been from the Anthopoulos regime. Now, I know that Espinal is under Shapiro and Atkins. Espinal's been pretty solid. Everyday player last year, made the All-Star game and has been pretty useful utility guy. Prospects don't work out 99% of the time. And I think that that is something that we need to kind of keep in mind here, take into consideration when judging this regime. And they have had some big time prospects pop. Look at Alek Manoah. I mean, the dude has been lights out since he's been called up from the to the big leagues in 2021. Yes, he has had a few blemishes lately, but he's a full-on success, right? Alek Manoah, there's one. Ricky Tiedemann moving up the ranks here. If you look at a guy like Addison Barger, right? He's a prospect that has developed under this Atkins Shapiro regime. He may be currently ready to take the next step. He has struggled in AAA. This is the thing with prospects, right? There is a development timeline that just no player develops the same. We're watching it with Nate Pearson. Do Atkins and Shapiro get credit for Nate Pearson if he winds up being a big time high leverage reliever for this team and truly contributing in 2023 and being that high velo, high strikeout guy that everyone has been after for the last 2 years? Do they get credit for that? Right? Development is not linear, and we're seeing it. Nate Pearson is a great example. So is there a flaw in the way that they are drafting I don't know. I haven't sat down and actually combed through all of the other teams' prospects, what the average percentage of guys who make it is, where the Jays' percentage is on that. But I think that they have changed their drafting philosophy a little bit lately, in that they are going younger. You saw them take Brandon Barriera. Ricky Tiedemann was out of high school. So you're seeing them take more high school guys than they used to. They used to be very college focused, because college players just tend to be a little bit more developed, a little closer to the big leagues, maybe not quite as high a ceiling. So they have taken some more high ceiling guys with maybe, like Josh was saying, right, bust or become stars a little bit more. But yeah, prospects are prospects.
Yeah, the crapshoot factor is impossible to ignore. What's this? This is all of baseball now, right? Swing as hard as you can just in case you hit it. That's what we're doing with our prospects, right?
I mean, if you look at baseball, dude, it's truly the most developmental sport out of all of them. It's one of the reasons why nobody gives a shit about the MLB draft, right?
Yeah.
You watch the NFL draft or the NHL draft, there are full on like bars.
Yeah, this guy's
going
to contribute to a Super Bowl team this year. Yeah, it's not.
The number one draft pick overall for baseball is still going to at least take a year of development. At least.
Yeah, there's no such thing, like you said, drafting a guy out of high school who maybe is further away from helping you, drafting a guy who dominated in college. There's still no guarantee that that guy's going to be any good. So you might as well take the guy with the upside. That's what I say. Update on the dog situation. My daughter sent me this on her way to school and said, I don't know what this is, but I'll clean it up. And it was just this like picture of the dog with something. He's sure proud of himself though, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he did it. Look at, he's like, oh, I got it.
He's got chopsticks. He's got I tried to see what
he doesn't like
apart,
he doesn't like, but sticky fingers either when he's eating chips.
No, exactly. I didn't see a couch or a cushion or a dog bed that was ripped apart, so my best guess is it's one of my wife's like hats that he somehow, so she's gonna be thrilled when she wakes up.
Yes. I can just picture you not liking one of her hats and being like, oh, it's too low.
The dog got it. Ooh, I covered it in bacon grease. You know, that hat that makes you look a lot older than you really are, sweetie. Okay, this is a total tangent here. We'll keep this quick. My wife finally, for the first time in years, she has glasses. She was really rocking these like really old man glasses that were like from the 90s, you know, like the thick frames with the bridge across. And it's just like, I hated them so much, Scott. She thought she looked so cool. She did not. Oh man. It was one of those like, but I couldn't say how bad she looked in them. So I was it was positive reinforcement every time she wasn't wearing them. It was like, oh, you look so good today. Or she'd wear like her old glasses, which was the more modern style. But I was like, oh, your red glass. I really like those red glasses on you. Those are so nice. All right. Anyways, that's it for prospect talk. Unless you have anything else to add.
Just that Josh Derbecker appreciate the message, and he said, I'm spiraling here at the end, and that's kind of how I felt at the end of our rant about prospects, is I'm spiraling here.
That's accurate. That's fair. Okay, this one comes in from maybe the best Twitter handle we've seen in a while. This is from @Jenny from the Rock. Hello from Newfoundland, Scott and Adam. Jays are looking good, especially after this homestand. This must have been sent in before the last two games.
Yes, I get that feeling. Actually, I think it was. I didn't check the date, but yeah, I think it was.
Jenny wants to know, how's the schedule look? Is it getting easier in May?
It is not. It is not getting easier. As of today, this is from friend of the show, Mitch Bannon. As of today, the Blue Jays' next 15 series, 48 games to come against teams above are at 500. So buckle up.
Buckle up. Okay, two last things to get to here. One from Discord. We have a trade.
Yes.
Not big news, but it's news. Heinemann back with the team. Vinny Capra sent the other way to the Pirates. So original Blunt Smoking in Discord, it said the Magic Man is back. If you remember, yeah, he's famously literally a magician.
He's a clubhouse magician.
Would do magic tricks for the fellas. So there you go. He was with us last year. Scott, why did we trade for him?
Depth. Stevie Berman is the backup catcher in AAA Buffalo, and he broke his thumb. So basically moving Vinny Capra, middle infielder that probably wasn't on the pecking order of guys who would be called up if there was an injury. So he was expendable. They needed that depth behind the plate, and Tyler Heinemann knows the guys. Makes sense. The Pirates needed a little bit of infield depth. Vinny Capra fit there. Best of luck to Vinny in Pittsburgh. And welcome back, Tyler Heinemann. Hopefully, Vinny Capra, never need.
Was Vinny Capra our second best second baseman? Or am I being too hard on Espinal and Biggio?
I mean, he's behind Barger on the.
I know. I'm just being smart. Yeah,
of course. Yes.
All right. Last one here, and we'll get out of here. Brenda from Patreon. Thank you, Brenda. Says, hate to say it, but I'm starting to think Adam is right. Thanks, Brenda. Power rank the AL East for me, please. So I think this is in response to what I was kind of talking about on the MLB Monday show yesterday, Scott, in that
the Red Boston Sox might not be the horrible team we think. For. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the AL East standing. She wants us to power rank these five teams. So we got the Rays, Orioles, Blue Jays, Red Sox, and Yankees. Red Sox are only a half game back of us right now. Nope. Two and a half. No, I'm looking at this.
Two and a half. Yeah.
Two and a half back. Yankees in dead last. That's nice to see.
Listen, the Yankees have been completely devastated by injuries. They have been hit harder than almost any other team in Major League
Baseball.
Aaron
Judge to the 10-day IL.
That doesn't help. Giancarlo Stanton, who's constantly injured, is being consistent with that. Their pitching has been ripped to shreds. Carlos Rodon, their big free agent that they went out and spent mega bucks on in the offseason, is currently on the IL. Frankie Montas, that they made a huge trade for and gave up a bunch of prospects to the Oakland Athletics to grab at the trade deadline last year to bolster their starting rotation for the playoffs, out for the season, right? They are reeling, and I think that any team where you take out two of their top four starters is going to be in some trouble, and adding their top two offensive threats does not help. The Yankees are still scary, but if we're just going to, so I guess it depends on how you want to do the power rankings. If you're just doing it for right now, how the teams are looking currently and where their state is at May 2nd, 2023, I think the standings are probably a pretty accurate representation of the power rankings. Rays 1, Baltimore 2, Jays 3, Red Sox 4, Yankees 5. If you're asking us to project the power rankings by the end of the season, I still believe the Yankees are a playoff team if they can get healthy and stay healthy. Now, if they can get healthy and they're just right back to where they are, obviously this season might not be what Yankees fans were hoping for, which was another AL East win. The Red Sox, and I know you touched on this, Adam, I think they're going to be this AL East truly could break records this year for the kind of production we see out of it. There could be four legitimate playoff teams coming out of the AL East, never done before. All five teams could finish above 500, never been done by a division before. So are the Red Sox good? No, but they definitely aren't as bad as everyone said they were. And I don't know if you're on board with that. I don't know where your power rankings are, Adam.
Yeah, I differ from you a little bit. I would say the Red Sox. Ooh, I might. Oh, I'm not quite ready to say they're good. Like, I don't think they're going to be. They're going to be a playoff team, yeah. But they could be. I also like I'm leaning. If the spectrum is good or not as bad as we thought they were, I think they're closer to good than just better than we thought they were. Because I really didn't think they were going to be good at all. The Yankees, honestly, I think are worse than I thought they were. I think the Yankees are the worst team in the AL East.
Well, they're sure the worst team in the AL East without Stanton and Judge in the lineup, I'll tell you that.
Or like any starting pitchers. I mean, I remember when we were doing our preseason like preview, right? And we were looking mm-hmm. at what does April hold for this team. I was frustrated because I'm like, well, the Yankees only have one starting pitcher right now in Garrett Cole, who, by the way, having a Cy Young season, probably responsible for six of their 15 wins single-handedly, maybe.
Yeah.
So without Garrett Cole, are they, 9-21? Maybe. They're 15-15 right now. But like I was saying, they had such a soft schedule in April that I was frustrated because I was like, this team is still going to be at the top of the division at the end of April, despite all this like decimation to the starting pitching, right? Mm-hmm. They haven't done that. I don't know. Like, despite the considerably soft schedule, they've not been able to keep themselves afloat. So I've been surprised by that. Baltimore, I've been surprised with. I thought they were going to have more of a regression immediately. I still
think they are going to.
They're overachieving, but man, when you start 19-9, all of a sudden those kids, they start to believe in themselves. They start to go, hey, we're for real, And then the narrative gets spun of like, nobody believed in us, and you're putting the bulletin board material up. Mm-hmm. Like everybody picked us to regress. Everybody figured we were going to finish below 500 or, that the young kids couldn't, carry the whatever the thing is. Right. And all of a sudden they're ahead of the Blue Jays. They're ahead of the Yankees. They're like keeping pace pretty close with the Rays. It's like, here we are May 2nd. And
time will tell, obviously, but my problem with the Orioles is the same as my problem with the Red Sox. I just don't believe their starting pitching is going to hold up all season long. Although the Orioles continue to find arms in that bullpen out of freaking nowhere that are high leverage guys, their bullpen has been completely shut down again, even though their starting pitching has sort of sucked outside of Tyler Wells. I mean, Kyle Gibson has been consistent, but outside of those two, it is rough. And the Orioles are just bludgeoning teams to death and winning these 9-7 victories. Can that model work long term? I'm doubtful, but sure worked in April, Adam.
Sure worked in April. all right. Before I touch on the Rays, because I do think the Rays are overrated too, they've played nobody good. Well, that's not true. They've played the Blue Jays and the Astros, and they're 2-4 against those teams. Everybody else has sucked. They did get four games against the Red Sox, so they swept the Red Sox. Now, are the Red Sox good? That's the question, right? If they're good, then you're chalking that up and you say, well, the Rays swept them, so the Rays must be good. If you don't think the Red Sox are actually good, then you can't give Tampa Bay credit. So I'm still kind of on the fence about that. Does Tampa Bay deserve credit for sweeping the Red Sox? I mean, sweeping anybody, you deserve credit. But absolutely. I do think the Rays are absolutely have an inflated record.
That said, they are winning. Winning against any team is hard, even if they are a below 500 team, especially to the degree that the Rays have done it, right? Which is just complete domination over these bottom feeding teams.
So here's my power rankings. Because you're going, as of today, you're just going with what the standings are, right? Tampa, or Baltimore, less. Toronto, Boston, New York?
Yes. Yeah, I'll go with that right now. If we're just going for May 2nd, currently, where are the power rankings? And power rankings always shift. Yeah, I'm going with that.
All right. I'm going with Blue Jays 1, Rays 2, Orioles 3, Red Sox 4, Yankees 5.
Okay.
There you go. While we're on the topic of young teams or teams that are overachieving and is it sustainable? I know this isn't a Blue Jays topic. I touched on it yesterday on the MLB show. Pittsburgh Pirates. I just want your thoughts on this before we get out of here, Scott. They're 20-9 right now. Are they for real?
I'm sorry. I've got friends that are Pirates fans, and they're getting really annoyed with me because I refuse to give them much credit. I need to see more out of the Pirates before I make an actual call on whether they're good or not. They have had an incredible start to the season. Well-deserved for that fan base who have just taken one lump after another over the years. And it's really good to see them get a little bit of life, you know, put into them. It's awesome to see Andrew McCutchen come back and just have such a hot start. Carlos Santana has been their other kind of free agent pickup that has just been nothing but success, a success story in Pittsburgh. O'Neill Cruz getting injured is big, and I just don't buy that this starting pitching is as good as they have looked. I'll eat my words. I mean, the NL Central, buddy, is a weak division. If there's a division that could be, I mean, go Pirates. I hope they do well. By the way, while we're talking of this, I'm at that Pittsburgh Pirates series. So I'm going to have walk-off stickers with a little QR code that will send you to the YouTube. If you see me in Pittsburgh and you're there, please stop and say hello. I know I got a couple messages from people who came to my shows over the weekend and they didn't stop and say hello. And I was like, why not?
Scott's not a celebrity. He's approachable.
I am not a celebrity. Yes. And I'm very approachable. I'm far more of a nerd than anything else. So
just don't try and buy a keychain for the price of a dirty old lime.
Of a dirty old lime, or you'll get me worked up. Yes.
Pittsburgh finished the season 62-100 last year. Mm-hmm. I don't think they finish above 500 this year.
I feel
despite
the same
this
way.
Hot start. Oddly enough, St. Louis won the division last year, 93 wins. Bottom of the NL Central this year, 10-19 to start the season.
Wow.
Yeah. Milwaukee, I would say if I had to, I don't want to power rank the whole NL Central, but my favorite to win the NL Central
Milwaukee
right now is probably
is
the Brewers.
My favorite too. Yeah, me too.
So. Okay, well, there you go, Scott. That's mailbag for today.
Okay,
we got an interview for tomorrow. You want to tease that?
Yes, we do. Shoaib Ali from Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590. The Fan in Toronto is going to be joining us. So we will talk this Red Sox series, Blue Jays, Bo Bichette, all sorts of stuff. Feel free to drop a comment if you've got something that you want us to ask Show, and we will do that. At Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. DM us if you want to link to the Discord. Patreon, a tip of the hat to you. Really appreciate you supporting the channel the way you do. And feel free to drop us a comment here for next mailbag, if that is something that you would like to try and participate in. We're always combing through the comments on YouTube here. I know Adam's pretty diligent with that, so hopefully next week we can get you on if you didn't get on today. All the best, everybody. Take care. We'll see you tomorrow. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh, with a drop. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.